I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Before we get underway with our movies segment today, I want to give you an update on the diesel fuel spill that occurred at the Inner Harbor yesterday. Mayor Brandon Scott, the mayor of Baltimore, and Governor Wes Moore held a press conference early this morning. The timeline that they outlined was that yesterday at around 11 o'clock, Johns Hopkins Hospital on the east side of Baltimore reported that 200 gallons of diesel fuel had spilled at their facility. That's at 11 o'clock. At about 1 o'clock, the Baltimore City Fire Department responded to a 911 call that there was a diesel fuel spill in the marina in Harbor East. And about an hour later, at 2 o'clock, the state of Maryland, the city of Baltimore, and the Coast Guard set up a coordinated response center. And then by 7 o'clock last night, or a little bit before 7, Johns Hopkins updated their initial report and said that instead of a 200-gallon diesel spill in East Baltimore at their facility, it was 2,000 gallons of an uncontained spill. So they are starting to clean it up as we speak. It is contained in the marina, which is at the South Central Avenue Bridge over in Harbor East. The water is red because there's a dye in the diesel fuel that is in the water and turning it red. There is no impact to drinking water, as officials have emphasized. There are some street closures from Central Avenue to Fleet Street, and the city expects continued traffic pattern disruption well into tomorrow at least, and perhaps even later. So that's what's going on with the diesel fuel spill down in Harbor East. And now for what's going on in the movie world. Anne Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies, joins us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Anne, how you doing?
Hello, Tom. Doing well. Thank you.
And Jed Dietz, he's the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. He is stuck in the middle here in Studio B avec moi. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So, Anne, you wrote this book called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. And I couldn't help but notice that earlier last month, you wrote a piece in the Washington Post, and the lead, the first line of this piece was, "Whatever happened to watching a movie?" Mm. And I thought, now that's disconcerting. A person who's written an entire book about how to watch a movie says, "Whatever happened to watch a movie?" And you go on to say the questions become more than rhetorical. Because in mid-April, a Minecraft movie was becoming a box office juggernaut, and theaters were reporting a trend that involved young filmgoers throwing food, doing backflips, and standing on their heads when the film's star Jack Black said the phrase chicken jockey. So, Anne, I was enlightened by this piece, but also very disturbed that I had no idea that this was going on. And I realized that so much of what happens in the universe happens without my noticing it.
Exactly. It's probably for the best.
And
too, right?
I'm supposed to be in the business of telling people what's going on in the universe. And I'm getting to think that I have no idea what's going on with you. What is this about doing backflips and throwing food in movie theaters? I think that's an age-old tradition.
True.
But standing on your head when the person in the movie says, chicken jockey? This is really happening, huh?
I guess so. I mean, like, look, I'm with you in terms of not really fully connecting with this moment culturally. And this is also a sign from said universe that maybe we're just getting too old for this stuff. But yeah, it's, but to your point though, these trends, it's a Minecraft gamer inside joke thing, I think. And, but like you said, the participatory movie going has been around forever. And, you know, this is also, we're celebrating an anniversary of the Rocky Horror Picture Show this year, which, you know, is the gold standard for right. participatory movie going. So I can't get too grouchy about it. But the greater point of that piece was just basically, you know, it's something that I've said for a while, and everybody knows it. It's just that movies have changed and our viewing habits have changed, and what we think of as movies has changed. Is something that you see on streaming a movie? Is something that you see on streaming that, you know, goes more than one time a movie? I don't know. It just gets into these existential questions about whatever happened to the old hour and 40-minute long movie that you would go to a theater, sit down and watch, and then leave.
Yeah. Well, and just to bring it up to speed, as of yesterday, Minecraft has made $423 million in North America and is number 9 on the watch list from box office.
$423 million and no one's ever seen it because they're doing backflips and throwing food. They've never actually watched the movie.
Well, maybe they have to go back. Maybe they have to buy two tickets.
I mean, I have a vague recollection of, you know, being a teenager and being in a movie that was about Pocahontas for some reason. And I don't think we were there. My girlfriend and I were not there to see the movie. We were there to make out. That was like a safe place to make out. So we were making out, and something happened in the movie where Pocahontas said, what should I do? Or what do you want? And somebody in the movie said, I want a Clark Bar, which was a, you know, a line from an ad that was going on at the time. And the entire place erupted in like this spasm of laughter that lasted for 10 minutes. So no one heard the next 10 minutes of the movie.
That is awesome.
But I just, it interrupted our makeout session. It was a very big deal. But, you know, so people have been, you know, chiming in sometimes. And now you have movies where the seats move around and stuff, right? They like shake if the boat is capsizing and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. But you're right to ask this question, whatever happened to watching a movie? Here's a movie a whole lot of people have watched. It's called Lilo and Stitch. It's at the Harbor East Cinema and the Senator Theater. Hugely successful. Let's listen to a little clip.
Lilo, how's it going?
Look, David, I got a dog.
Oh? You sure that's a dog?
Yeah.
Rough. Oh. Okay.
Stitch. There you are.
Oh, toss that.
No. Stitch. Put it down.
Is that?
Yes.
Naka.
I'm gonna give you to the count of three, Stitch.
Oh.
So this is about a little Hawaiian girl who's evidently very lonely, and she befriends, as one does, a runaway alien, you know, and hoping that the runaway alien will help to mend her fragmented family. Now, as I understand it, Jed, you and Anne are the only three people who haven't seen this movie. But this has been another juggernaut that has really turned the tide for the movie business, the theater business, in a big way, hasn't it?
Yeah, the little animal plus Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible have turned the tide. It went from the first quarter was 11% down year to date. We're now 26% up, mostly thanks to those two movies. And people are predicting, I mean, ComScore is predicting a $4.2 billion summer, which would be the biggest summer ever. Bigger than, you know.
So we're no longer talking like pre-COVID and blah, blah, blah. It's just like forever and ever.
Yeah. And we don't know yet. I mean, the summer is a huge movie-going time, so we'll find out. But there's a lot of big stuff coming.
Yeah. Well, you know, good for them. I'm glad it's turning around. And listeners, we'd like to know what is sending you to the theaters. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. It is the summer, and as Jed said, it's a big movie-going time. What are you going to see, or what are you streaming at home? Midday@WIPR.org is our email address, and you're welcome to drop us a message and chime in about what's in theaters or what's on your screen at home. Let's listen to another clip, or a clip from another movie. This is the MI movie, as we insiders say. It's MI. You don't call it Mission Impossible. You call it MI. It's called Dead Reckoning, with the inimitable Tom Cruise.
It's been a long time, Ethan.
Your mission, should you choose to accept. Everything you are, everything you've done, has come to this. I need you to trust me. One last time.
One last time. Now, Anne, you voiced some skepticism about this in the Washington Post, that it really will be the last time, and you pointed out any number of examples of people who've sworn it was the last time, and then they came back. So that might happen. But you said something in your review, Anne, that I thought was really something. You said that the secret of these MI movies, and the reason that Ethan Hunt, which is Tom Cruise's character, has proved more consistent than James Bond, or enduring than Jason Bourne, or even more likable than John Wick. What is that reason? Because you're putting him in quite rarefied company there.
Really, just comes down to Tom Cruise and his work ethic and his focus, which, you know, can sometimes be a detriment, and you can sort of see him working really hard, but he just is completely all in on these movies and make sure that they deliver on their promise. And it's resulted in a remarkably consistent franchise. I mean, I went back and looked at that very first Mission Impossible movie, which came out in 96. And, you know, when you think of just how many movies they've made over this incredible span during which we've experienced so much change in terms of just movie making technology, movie going technology, viewing habits and things like that, these movies have really stuck the landing remarkably consistently. And I give him so much credit for that. He does surround himself with people, as do most people at his level. You know, when he finds a team that he can work with and that can execute vision, he just sticks with them. And he's done that with Chris McQuarrie. He did that earlier with Robert Towne, the screenwriter. He makes sure that the stories and the beats and everything is all there. And of course, we all know about the stunts that he does, which have been part of the ballyhoo and part of the hype, but also kind of embody this kind of thoroughgoing commitment that he has to making these things as good as they can possibly be, and just giving the audience exactly what we want.
Yeah, and Jed, it is, as you say, you know, acting as this year's savior of the movie industry.
Yeah, well,
and he's had other movies, Top Gun and stuff, have been saviors of the movie industry in prior summers.
No, it's true. He really wants these things to be seen in movie theaters. I saw it with a crowd, which I was so happy to see it with a crowd. But I remember when Anne brought Robert Towne to town for one of the early film festivals to talk about the movie. He'd come from, I think it was Mission Impossible 2.
Mm-hmm. This is 30 years, this franchise.
In Australia. And so here's Robert Towne, you know, the writer of Chinatown, this revered, filmmaker, director, and writer. And the thing he kept talking about was how smart Tom Cruise was. He said he's incredible to work with on the set. He knows exactly what he's trying to do. And Robert Towne, I don't think, I didn't really ask him on this, but I don't think was particularly wild about all the stunts and stuff. But he got what, it's sort of back to one of Anne's points about how to watch a movie, what they're trying to deliver. And he knew how to deliver it. And by God, he has done it. I think he's the only filmmaker to get two honorary Palme d'Ors from Cannes.
Wow. A double. Wow. Yeah. Well, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, they say it's the last one. Who knows? If you've seen it, give us a call. Let us know what you thought. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. So there's a movie, a documentary, which is streaming on Max and Hulu and Amazon Prime, about Pee Wee Herman, the actor Paul Rubens. Let's listen to a little clip from that one.
Guess what? I'm having a party, and you're invited!
It's weird to be in this situation having a documentary made because I'm used to having control of my alter ego. I wanted to be a performance artist. I could show you my characters. Out of nowhere, Pee Wee Herman popped out of me. The audience ate it up and went crazy.
When I first saw Paul as Pee Wee, I was like, who is this little man in this bow tie? And why is he throwing Tootsie Rolls at people?
Hollywood had taken notice. I mean, how could they not?
I remember thinking, this is going to be really big.
There wasn't like a moment in the 80s that wasn't super cool to be me. And then dark music. Bum, 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 bum. I lost control of my anonymity, and it was devastating.
The movie is called Pee-wee as Himself. He's a fascinating character. That show, Pee-wee's Playhouse, did change his life the way and so many particular projects have changed the lives of particular actors. What'd you think of the movie, Ann?
Well, I was absolutely riveted by it. And I think the best part for me was watching him grow as an artist. He went to Cal Arts. I mean, he was a full-on artist, an art student, for whom performance was, you know, one thing in a big quiver of means of expression. And so just watching him evolve as a creative person and then evolve in, you know, the persona of Pee-wee is just, it's just fabulous to witness this. And I'll never forget, I remember when I was, you know, in the 80s after Pee-wee became huge, seeing a photograph of Paul Rubens out of Pee-wee drag and just being stunned at how handsome he was. I mean, he was just gorgeous, you know? And you see these wonderful home movies of him at Cal Arts as a young kid, just pouring on that charisma and that attractiveness. And it's just, that was my favorite part of this. It's a two-part, it's a long movie. It's a two-parter, but that is just really special to be able to see somebody really kind of emerge before your eyes. It was really lovely.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Rubens, he was a major, major presence in culture in the 1980s.
And totally self-created. I mean, this was on nobody's agenda to have this character created except his. And he created it from the ground up. He was a member of the Groundlings, which is this improv group. Lorraine Newman, a bunch of the SNL people have come out of that group in L.A. And he kept honing this character. They didn't want to make a movie. He then created a show that toured to huge acclaim, played the Hollywood Bowl, went around the country. They finally did want to make a movie. It ended up being Tim Burton's first movie that they made together. So he launching two careers, and pretty major careers, both of them. So it's odd to talk about it right after Tom Cruise, but there's a lot of similarities in his knowledge and instincts about
and in terms of cultural impact.
Absolutely.
Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Ann Hornaday is the film critic for the Washington Post. We're talking movies today. We'll have more on the other side of a quick break. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wipr.org. Let us know what you're checking out this weekend, either at home or in theaters. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, crabs, fish, and oysters. Oh, my! On the Record, host Ashley Sterner will take over the host chair for me here tomorrow on Midday. And she's going to check in as on the critical marine ecosystems of the Chesapeake Bay. So I hope that you can join Ashley tomorrow on Midday. And if you just joined us, it's Midday at the Movies. We'd love to see what or hear about what you have been wanting to see, what you have seen, what you are planning to see. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. I'm joined here in Studio B by Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and joining us from Washington, the film critic for the Washington Post, Anne Hornaday. So, guys, I want to play another clip from another movie. This is The Phoenician Scheme. It's at the Charles Theater and the Senator here in Baltimore. This is about a wealthy businessman named Zsa-Zsa Korda, who appoints his only daughter, who happens to be a nun, as the sole heir to his estate. This is a Wes Anderson movie, so you know you're in for some hijinks at some point. Here's a little clip from The Phoenician Scheme.
I've appointed you sole heir to my estate, which you may come into sooner rather than later. I'm provisionally manager of my affairs after the event of my actual demise on a trial basis.
Why?
Why what?
Why sooner rather than later, since you survived again? And why am I sole heir to your estate? You have 8 sons at last count.
9 sons.
9 sons. What about them?
They're not my heirs.
Why not?
I have my reasons.
Which are what?
My reasons? I'm not saying.
Uh-oh. That sets up some pretty suspenseful possibilities, Anne. What'd you think?
You know, I liked this movie, and I will say that as someone who's kind of lost patience with Wes Anderson recently. I just, you know, we all kind of know his style, his house style by now. It's very exacting, very aestheticized, very steeped in romance, you know, sort of retro, vintage romance. And I think that his visual world building, as captivating and gorgeous as it can be, has sometimes been at the expense of real ideas. I just think sometimes it feels kind of empty to me. I heard it even in that clip you just played, this relationship between Benicio del Toro and Mia Threpleton, who's the young actress who makes her, I believe, feature debut in this role, is really enchanting. And I think Anderson has a little bit more on his mind this time. I mean, he's critiquing capitalism, he's critiquing colonialism, he's critiquing rapacious greed and contemplating spiritual reckoning. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit more substance to this one than I have found recently. And I was pretty well pleased by it.
Yeah, I think his movies are just worth seeing because of the seeing part of it.
Yeah, he's a singular filmmaker. And it's also interesting, it is Threpleton's first movie. She's Kate Winslet's daughter.
Right.
So it's an interesting acting emergence here. So.
Yeah. We have an email from Annette who says, I may try to see Lilo and Stitch. We'd love to go to the theater, but it needs to be short enough for our bladders. So longer sit times with endless ads before the feature starts are losing a demographic of boomers, people who grew up going to movies. So Annette speaks the truth for lots of folks, including Elon Musk. And Taria says that big fan of Paul Rubens and Pee-wee, especially in the movie Blow. And I can't wait to see the documentary. So that's another Pee-wee Herman fan. I mean, Paul Rubens' life, he had some trouble towards the end, and he has passed away, regrettably. Joseph says, I'm a movie buff, but I was amazed to see Lilo and Stitch blow away Mission Impossible. The kiddie movies are popular. I won't be going to see either movie because I'm not a Tom Cruise fan and kiddie movies don't appeal to me, but I'm looking forward to seeing The Phoenician Scheme, The Life of Chuck, and 28 years later in the weeks to come. I'm also looking forward to the Maryland Film Festival. Festival later this fall. And the new Next Festival here that Baltimore Public Media produces will be also happening in October. So let's take a minute and talk about this movie, Life of Chuck. Jed, this is by a guy from who went to school at Towson University, Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
The movie isn't opened yet. It opens next weekend. It opens this weekend. I think it opens on the 6th. So I guess neither you or Anne have had a chance to see it, but, Mike Flanagan is starting to make his mark.
Yeah, it's a fascinating path he's been on. When we first saw a movie he submitted to the film festival through a mentor of his at Towson, Steve Yeager, it was called Make Believe, and it was starring a young actress we'd never heard of. She was also a student named Megan Anderson, who's gone on to be a major force at the Everyman Theater.
Yeah, she's a member of the resident company there. She was in The Wire. She was in Veep. She did all sorts of stuff, right?
And he was clearly brewing something. I mean, you couldn't quite tell where he was heading. He went to Hollywood and really became a major force in horror movies, which would not have been predicted by me from Make Believe. But he's a big deal filmmaker that came out of the Towson program.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for a movie called Friendship, which is at the Charles Theater, that looked like a very interesting take. What's that one about?
Well, this is interesting because where Flanagan has really made his mark has been in on Netflix with these horror series. Yeah. And Friendship stars a guy named Tim Robinson, who also became a real cult figure on Netflix with this series called I Think You Should Leave. He's from Detroit. He has this kind of wonderful Midwest everyman quality. He's working in that kind of cringe area of Larry David, where he's kind of bumbling around and bumbling into situations. And in this feature film, he plays a guy who lives down the street from a new neighbor who's played by Paul Rudd, and they embark on a tentative friendship. And it kind of explores the awkwardness of male bonding and, wish fulfillment and aspiration. And watching Paul Rudd and Tim Robinson sort of play off each other is really delightful. I mean, I think some of the, you can detect some of the shtick underneath, and some of the situations feel a little bit predictable and a little bit derivative of comedies like I Love You, Man and other similarly themed movies. But, they one thing I really admired about this is they do stick the landing, and some that's hard, endings are really difficult.
Yeah.
And they do stick it. And I think certainly for fans of Tim Robinson, they're going to want to see this. And even for people who aren't familiar with him, I think they'll get a really good introduction to his brand of humor and his persona, which is quite disarming.
Am I remembering I Think You Should Leave as a sketch comedy show that was on Netflix? Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I thought there were some really funny bits in it.
He's talented. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jed, what's your take on Friendship?
Well, it
not in general, but but this movie called Friendship.
I'm for it in general. Right. Yes. This is interesting to me because it reminds me of a couple of films I saw at New Next. Actually, one was called Ephus, which is a sort of made up documentary about old guys playing baseball that used to play younger. We used to play against each other when they were younger. And one called Christmas Eve at Miller's Point, which is about a Christmas Eve event inside a made-up family in a made-up town in Long Island. And it's those two's connection to Friendship are that they're not like honed plots. I would say even the script is pretty roughly put together. Random scenes come in, don't always make sense. But there's some sort of nonsense in it, either of character or plot. So something might be brewing. This might be a new phase. And none of these filmmakers know each other. The two Ephus and Christmas Eve at Miller's Point filmmakers know each other, but they don't know the team that did Friendship. And I just think we're seeing young people emerge in filmmaking, and they're maybe Pee Wee Hermans, maybe future Pee Wee Hermans as filmmakers, maybe not. We'll find out. Yeah. But it's interesting to me to see three films, within the last year that have sort of similar ethos.
Yeah, well, what the Democratic Party seems reluctant to do, the people in the film industry don't seem at all reluctant. That's very nice. And I want to ask you about a movement called, or a movie called Pavements, which is a documentary about an actual band, which I will confess I've never heard of. It's an American indie band called Pavement. And this is it was a 90s band. It was, you know, you described it as somewhat iconic. But again, I guess I missed a lot of the 90s, I guess. I don't know. But what did you think? A documentary about rock bands can be dreadfully boring or they can be really good.
Well, this one is really good. And to your point about missing Pavements, Pavement is one of those acts that absolutely defines you as either a boomer or a Gen Xer. And if you're too old for Pavement, which I was, by the way. I mean, I too was just not, I was not in their orbit. But Alex Ross Perry, who I know Jed knows quite well, he's been to the Maryland Film Festival several times, tackled this, and he just addresses all of the pitfalls of rock and roll biopics head on by creating it's called Pavements, plural, because he uses so many different genres and ways of storytelling to tell the story of the band. And so it's not just a VH1 Behind the Music biopic, but he stages a musical based on Pavements music, which stars Zoe Lister-Jones and Mike Esther. And it also kind of does a little behind the scenes mini doc about his own feature kind of, high gloss Hollywood biopic. So this is a very kaleidoscopic look. Some of it's not terribly reliable in terms of its veracity, in terms of you're not exactly sure what's real. Is the musical real? Is the movie within a movie real? He does tip his hand eventually, but it's a very well crafted piece of filmmaking. I mean, it's complicated, and I think he's had a lot of really good help, especially from the editor Robert Green, who is a terrific editor, and this really does live and die on the editing, and they do pull it off. So it's a lot of fun, and certainly Pavement fans are going to want to see it.
Yeah, there you go. If you're a fan, you got to get out to the Charles Theater. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. So, Ann, real quick, I want to preview some of the big blockbusters that are coming up this summer. But before we do, I want to ask your opinion about another movie at the Charles Theater here in Baltimore called Jane Austen Wrecked My Life. I like the title.
Yeah, it kind of says it all. This is a modern day tale set in the contemporary times about a young woman who's trying to finish her novel. She works at Shakespeare and Company in Paris. And she gets entry into a writer's retreat in England. And so she goes to this lovely bucolic setting to work on her fiction and becomes embroiled with the people there, one of whom is a very ostentatious anti-hero, kind of brooding, wonderfully, wonderfully played by the English actor Charlie Anson. So certainly for people, you know, if you're missing your Bridgerton, if you're missing your Jane Austen movies, your Senses and Sensibilities, this is a perfectly suitable fix of a Regency era sensibility, only kind of extruded through contemporary mores.
Oh, sounds like fun. So I want to run a few titles by you, both of you, because they're on the way. The end of this month, a movie called F1, the movie, and this is about a Formula One driver, Jed. You know, we have these blockbusters. It's this one and Jurassic World and Superman and stuff. So the summer has just begun, and we ain't seen nothing yet. And as you said earlier in the show, the movie business is, doing better than expected. So tell us what you know about F1, the movie, and do you think Formula One racing is something that has the kind of universal appeal that's going to make it a huge, huge flick?
Well, car racing has already won some chops, Ford and Ferrari versus Ferrari, and which was also tied into a business story. This one's got Brad Pitt as the star.
Yeah, Javier Bardem as well. Yeah.
Yes, and Brad Pitt's sort of the old guy, but my guess is there's some new technology about the filmmaking, where you're going to get a sense of the racing that we've never had before. F1s are always raced on city streets, which is a sort of added dramatic moment for the crowds and the drivers.
Yeah, and Jurassic World Rebirth. It's coming out just before the 4th of July weekend. It's been 5 years since the last one. This one, you know, getting a lot of pre-buzz, I guess, and these Jurassic World, this particular franchise, you know, sort of generally speaking, doesn't disappoint, right?
You know, honestly, it has disappointed me. I have not been a big fan of the last couple of Jurassic World movies, so I'm very much looking forward to F1 because I want to go back to that because it's the same filmmaker who did do that second Top Gun movie, and I think he did a very good job with that. So I'm actually looking forward to that. But yeah, the Jurassic World, that's an example. You know, we were talking about Mission Impossible earlier. I mean, I just think it's, you know, with these long, long, long running, kind of constantly rebooted, constantly sequelized movies, it's just so hard to do it well and to do it with some kind of originality. So I'll come into this one with an open mind, but I hope to be a little bit more engaged with it than I've been in the last couple.
Well, I guess as the saying goes, you've seen one dinosaur, you've seen them all. I mean, and I don't know how many times I hear that during the day. Is there a new Superman movie, Jed? So this is coming out in the middle of next month. So this is a new Superman. This is not some re-release of, you know.
No, it is anything. New. And, I have no idea how well it's going to work. There's some romantic elements in it that I think are fairly new to it. We'll find out more as we get closer. But it's interesting, given the caller who wrote in about length of movies, because right now there's some buzz going on because the movie, there are rumors that it's been trimmed. And some of the inside people are saying, oh, that's because things aren't working right. And other people are saying, no, it's because we've got a tighter movie.
Yeah.
And we'll find out. But they're hoping it'll be a big hit.
You know, when I was a child, I was not allowed to watch Superman on television. My mother wouldn't let any of us watch it because she thought we would go up to the garage roof and try to jump off. And she could have been right.
Good mother.
I mean, we were,
right.
You know, when you're five, I thought, well, he can fly. Why can't I fly? You know, so, I mean, I don't, you know, these franchises, it's just really difficult to figure out what's going to work, what's not. David Corenswet is, I guess, going to play Superman. I don't know his work, but what kind of chances do you give it in our last 30 seconds here?
Oh, my goodness. Ask me a hard one, why don't you? I don't know. I mean, it's funny because this is the 50th anniversary of Jaws, and in a couple of years we're going to have the 50th of Star Wars, and one which are often credited or blamed with kind of launching the blockbuster era, but Superman is in there too. I mean, that came out right during that era, the Christopher Reeve Superman, and I just feel like they've just gone back to the trough so many times. Yeah. I just don't know how much more they can do it.
Yeah, you gotta wonder. All right, yeah. Well, I appreciate both of you stopping by. As always, Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post, Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. So thank you much, Lee, and we'll see you next time.
Great, Tom.
Thank you.
And up next, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick has been to the new show at Arena Players in Baltimore. She'll have a review after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.